Good morning, Sean Barnett. It's nice to have you here.
Good morning.
I know it's very important. Is it Barnett or Barnett?
I go with either. Barnett helps people spell it.
Okay, let's go with Barnett. I know it's one of those things that matters a lot to people, but I always forget. The Spirit of the Mountains, Alpine Adventures and Reflections by Ron Hay. I was trying to place him and rather rudely called him. He's the vicar, isn't he? But he lives in Castle Hill, right?
That's right.
A long alpine career.
Yes. Yes. He first got attracted to the mountains after seeing that film of Hillary and Tenzing descending off Everest in 1953, and the film was shown around the country. And I've got a quote from him here. They came like gods from some even more lofty and unimaginable place above. And that really sums up, I guess, the theme of the book, being captured by the moments. But it's there's a very spiritual dimension to this book, as you'd expect from someone who's been a vicar.
So is it essentially his life in climbing and his philosophy and his thinking around his experience in climbing?
It's very much thematic. So the first half of the book, he talks about all the things that draws people to the mountains, often irresistibly in his case. The call of adventure, he describes an ascent of Pikiraka, Tahi or Earnslaw with his daughter Rachel, and they have some anxious moments on the climb. They've read about people turning back in the hut book, but they go and succeed on the mountain, which must have been a wonderful thing for him to experience with his daughter. So there's that sense of adventure. He talks about the beauty of the mountains. He's very taken with James K. Baxter's poem in the Matukituki Valley. A lot of the trips he describes in that area, he quotes sections from Baxter's, probably his most famous poem. Wildness, he talks about going to places where there aren't tracks and huts and the sense of exploration that can still give you even in modern times, and remoteness after describing experiences on Snowdon and the Tongariro Alpine Crossing. He describes a trip, the five passes in the back of Beyond and the importance of that. So he's sort of, in friendship too, there's a really nice description of his climb of Zurbriggen's Ridge on Araki Mount Cook with his friend Gavin McIntosh. And there's not many places to secure their belay, so Gavin's sort of belaying him and Ron sets off. And then Gavin says to him, it's just a psychological belay. And Ron turns around to him and says, that's the whole point of a psychological belay. You're not supposed to tell me it's a psychological belay. So there's some nice humour in there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So this sort of builds for the second part of the book, layer by layer. He's building up why mountains are important, but there's little hints that there's a more spiritual element coming. He just, in some of his descriptions, the high and remote Bona Glacier spread out like a giant altar cloth before the soaring spire of aspiring. So he hints that
works,
nicely.
Though,
it really works. Yep. It really works well. And then he sort of builds up to his main theme that about seeing God in the mountains. And as a Christian, I think he would see God in the mountains. I mean, mountains challenge our sense of vulnerability, our mortality. Sometimes they hasten our mortality. He's had friends die in the mountains, lots of people have. So it's not surprising that people start thinking about spiritual things in the mountains.
Look, if we think of Tao Māori, spirituality completely imbued in the maunga.
Yes.
And represented, and there's almost no separation between the spiritual and the physical. So someone else's faith or worldview inevitably, you know, forms itself, sees and draws in a similar way, no doubt.
That's right. And if there's one discordant note in the book, it would be that, and I guess you'd expect this from a vicar, he sort of places that Judeo-Christian belief sort of at the apex and other beliefs. I'm an atheist myself. You know, he talks about atheists being able to understand the beauty and magnificence of the mountain, but it's sort of placed lower than seeing God there. And I would from my point of view, I would say I think you can have an equally powerful response to the mountains simply from engaging with nature, from understanding the evolutionary processes that have created these wonderful places.
So the spirituality of the mountain will depend on the experience, the person experiencing the mountain, is your point.
Yes.
But there was a sense that what he directly compared?
Yeah, he sort of layered them at the book, and it just struck a slight discordant note with me. Probably just as an atheist, it's not actually a criticism of the book, because
sure.
I think this is his point of view.
It's his point of view.
We can accept that. And it's a book that promotes great reflection and questions. It's layered. It's got a wonderful cover picture that really sums it up. A soaring ice ridge on Tasman, our second highest mountain. Yeah, I just think that part of me is uncomfortable that Christian theology has also advocated dominion over nature, and that's had profoundly negative impacts around the world. So maybe for me I would have liked just a acknowledgement of that, perhaps.
Yeah, although there's as many Christian theologies now as there are people practicing Christianity. It's an interesting point, but it's also interesting that you're talking about it, because that gives the book, it says that his personality and his philosophy and his faith is interwoven in what he's written and in his experience of the mountains. We must mention the photography, because goodness, there's some classics from the 60s and 70s here. I can tell just by the colour tone of them. And does that add to the book?
It does. I think it sort of complements the book and helps the book rather than it being the strongest feature of the book. Definitely it's the writing and the text and the thoughtfulness of Ron's prose that are the real strengths of the book. The photography, there are some really nice images. The one on the cover, there's quite a painterly, beautifully composed image of Titi Tia aspiring from Cascade Saddle, which I really liked. But a lot of the other pictures, you could say, are kind of more personal.
We like family snaps.
Family snaps, yeah.
Yeah.
And they really work for sort of the descriptions of some of the family trips and things that Ron's been on. It's nicely produced. It's a hardback, nice square format. It's got some heft and weight to it. It smells good. I always smell a book, and all the different books, nice thick paper. So,
John,
you know,
McIntyre disabused me. What's the word?
Disabused?
Disabused me of that, because I'm a chronic book sniffer. I absolutely love the smell of new books, but apparently there's a whole society of them that I've stayed away from. But apparently something changed in paper some years back that means the addictiveness of our childhoods. We're now a bit like you, a psychological belay. We're psychologically experiencing the sniff of a book. There's still something there. Look, I appreciate your take on it all. It's an interesting addition, a personal addition to what is a fairly sizable oeuvre, right?
Yep.
And it comes at things a different way than perhaps some of our other professional mountaineers or mountain writers might have come at. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a straight memoir. It's not a straight trip accounts. There's a real depth and thought behind it, and that was really nice to read.
Excellent. Thank you very much, as always, for the thoughtful review, Sean. The book is The Spirit of the Mountains, Alpine Adventures and Reflections by Ron Hay. It is published by Mary Egan Publishing. $40 for a hardback with plenty of images, although we said many of them are of the family snap variety, but for those of you with trampers and climbers in your family, you'll recognise the style. And it has its own particular...
Charm.
Charm.